Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, Nobel laureate Eric Maskin talks about global markets and rising income inequality.
We should have seen a decrease in inequality with globalization, but that's not what has happened in the last 20 or 30 years.
Eric Maskin, for well over a decade, has been looking at why global markets haven't offered better economic opportunities for the world's poorest. Maskin is a professor at Harvard University and received the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2007. I met him shortly after his presentation at a seminar on inequality in developing economies hosted by the IMF. I began by asking him why we should care about rising income inequality.
There are several reasons. First, there's a moral argument which says that huge differences between people are simply not acceptable from the standpoint of a moral philosophy which believes in equal treatment of people. That isn't to say that everyone has to have exactly the same income, but huge differences are difficult to accept as somehow right. But I think there's a much more practical reason for worrying about inequality, which is that there's a high correlation between inequality and social unrest and political unrest. And so even if a country has no moral qualms whatsoever about the inequalities in its population, it's going to have to worry about inequality if it wants to keep the country together.
Yes, so political stability is a factor as well. Is it harder to address inequality in developing countries than it would be in wealthier countries?
I don't know. It's a challenge in both, let's put it that way. Rich countries, by definition, have more resources, and so perhaps rich countries can act faster on these questions. But it's true, sadly, that inequality is a widespread phenomenon, and which affects rich countries and poor countries alike.
And how does globalization play out in this? Has it helped reduce income disparities at all?
Globalization, although it's had many positive effects for poor countries, has also had the negative effect of increasing inequality. And the reason why globalization has tended to increase inequality is because it has given opportunities, employment opportunities, to people who have some skills to offer the global labor market, but it has left behind people without such skills. So when globalization occurs, there are now many jobs that didn't exist before. International companies start hiring Chinese workers or Indian workers. And that's very good for those workers who have at least some modest skills. Perhaps they speak English, or perhaps they have a little bit of schooling. The hundreds of millions of people who don't have those skills have been virtually unaffected by globalization. So the moderately skilled people see their wages rise, and the people without skills see their wages stagnate, inequality increases.
So based on what you're saying, it would seem the logical solution would be for private industry to start training their workers, no?
There's not likely to be enough of that kind of training on its own, because if you train me so that I can perform at a higher level, you're then going to have to pay me more. And furthermore, once you've trained me, I can go to work for someone else. I don't have to work with you. So your investment in my skills has been lost. And that's why inequality is not a problem that is going to go away by itself. If it could be solved simply by companies training workers to do the job, then there would be no need for government policy. The problem would be solved purely in the private sector. But because companies don't have sufficient incentive to do that training because their investments might be lost, there has to be someone else stepping in to deal with the inequality problem.
But when it comes to training, what about the argument that with globalization and global value chains, countries that are good at, for example, producing rice should focus on that and not worry about, expanding and trying to produce computers, for example. There are other countries that produce computers and that will, that will need rice. Wouldn't those trade relationships help address inequality?
Mm. What you've just described is the traditional theory of comparative advantage, which says that countries should specialize in producing the sorts of goods that their labor force is especially well suited for. So if you're a poor country with a lot of unskilled workers, you should specialize in rice or some other good which doesn't require much skill. If you thought that theory was all you needed, then we should have seen a decrease in inequality with globalization because a rice-producing country could specialize more in producing rice, and that would be very good for low-skill workers because they would be in higher demand, and inequality would fall in that country. But that's not what has happened in the last 20 or 30 years. Yes, inequality has fallen in some poor countries, but in many poor countries, inequality has actually risen. Look at China, for example. China has grown enormously, but it's not by producing traditional Chinese products. Quite the contrary, China has got rich by being part of the production process for Western goods, assembling computers, all sorts of goods which are largely consumed in the West. So the workers assembling those computers do have some skills, but these are not rice-producing skills. They are computer-producing skills. And so the traditional logic, the logic of comparative advantage, is not the logic that made China what it is today.
Your most recent research focuses on matching skills within a workforce, your thesis being the closer the skill sets within a group, the more productive they are. Do you believe that skills matching could ultimately reduce inequality?
Yes. I mean, if you accept the theory that what's going on with rising inequality is that people with higher skills, or at least some skills, are getting jobs, are getting matched, and workers with no skills are being left behind, then there is a clear-cut policy intervention that's implied, which is do something to increase the skills of the people at the bottom. Anything which makes them employable.
And I assume that could be as simple as providing poor people access to education.
That's right. So I take some comfort from the example of Brazil, which about 15 years ago, more than 15 years ago, started a program of conditional cash transfers to poor families that were willing to send their children to school. So the deal was, if you were a poor family, you got some money on condition that you send your children to school. Families were reluctant to do that because they needed their kids at home to work. But it turned out that when the kids went to school, they got some job training or some education, which led to the ability to get some job training. And they ended up getting jobs at the end. I have to admit that that inequality in Brazil is still very high, but it's notable that it has fallen in recent years, partly due to this generation of children who are actually able to get reasonable jobs thanks to the cash transfers that their families received.
There's research out of Harvard that shows public perceptions of inequality way lower than what the actual data shows. You know, in other words, income disparity is generally not seen as being a huge problem. Do you believe these misperceptions make it harder to implement policies that might help address the issue?
I'm not a political expert, and so I can't say for sure, but certainly my intuition is that these misperceptions interfere with progress. But also the problem has to do with the fact that the people that we're worried about when it comes to inequality, namely the people at the bottom, tend to be the most politically disenfranchised of all. So they're the ones for whom something should be done, but they find it very difficult to have a voice in the political discussion. I think that's changed a little bit in the last few years, where inequality has become a more visible issue on the political agenda. But we've got a long way to go before the people for whom inequality most matters really have their say.
That was Eric Maskin, Harvard professor of economics and Nobel laureate, talking about how education and skills training could help address income inequality. You can hear more podcasts like this one on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts.